Welcome.
Bienvenido.
Susan Sokolaba.
Magandang araw sa inyo.
Swagatam.
Bandeko babolingo. Bozali koyoka. Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
환영합니다.
Here on Earth.
Welcome to Here on Earth.
One woman, I will give an example of one woman. She had gone to fetch water. Literally, did she know that they had planted landmines near a well, and both her legs were blown off. When we met her during our documentation, we asked her, Grace, what can we do for you? She did not ask for money. Grace said, I still have two hands. They are sewing machines where I can use my hands. Is it possible to train me how to use the machine? And for us, we thought, if I were the one, I would be mourning. I don't have the legs. That's the attribute I'm talking about.
That's the voice of Ruth Ojamba Osheng, a Ugandan human rights activist. It might surprise you that Uganda has had a woman vice president, and women make up 49% of the nation's parliament. By comparison, women comprise only about 14% of the United States Congress. And even in the battle-scarred region of northern Uganda, where women are systematically raped as part of the war effort, women are working in the trenches to gain political power and a voice in the peace process. I'm Jean Faraka. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. This hour on Here on Earth, in what ways are African women wielding political power? What experiences make women well-suited for the negotiating table? We'd like to hear from you this hour. We're at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at hereonearth@wpr.org. This hour, you'll hear more from Ruth Ojamba Osheng, a human rights leader, peace activist, and director of ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange, known as ISIS Wiki. We'll also be joined by Eileen Tripp, Associate Dean of International Studies, Director of the Women's Studies Research Center, and Professor of Political Science and Women's Studies at the University of Wisconsin. She is author of Women and Politics in Uganda and Changing the Rules, The Politics of Liberalization and the Urban Informal Economy in Tanzania. And she is editor of Sub-Saharan Africa, the Greenwood Encyclopedia of Women's Issues Worldwide, and the Women's Movement in Uganda. History, challenges, and prospects. That is a mouthful. And I want to thank you, Eileen Tripp, very much, not just for being with us, but for bringing Ruth Ojamba here. She gave a speech at the university this week, and it's been quite a week for Jean Faraka, who got to talk with Mukhtar Mai, and also Ruth Ojamba. I was deeply honored by these interviews and to be so connected to their struggles in some of the most difficult places in the world for women to be working. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for letting me be here.
Now, you know Ruth directly. You knew her personally. You interviewed her when you were researching your book on Uganda.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What was it about her work in particular that prompted you to invite her to come to Madison?
Well, I think that in part, it was her passion and her level of involvement and engagement in bringing attention to the concerns of women in northern Uganda. As you know, this is perhaps one of the most difficult conflicts in Africa. Jan Englund, who's the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator of the United Nations, said that he did not know of any other place in the world where there's such a bad situation and one that has had so little international presence and so little international attention and relief. Ruth Ojamba is one person who's really bringing attention not just to this conflict, but also to what women are doing within this conflict and what they're doing about in their efforts in peacemaking in general.
Now, Ruth herself is the daughter of an Episcopalian minister. Mm-hmm. And she told me that she grew up in a family where the home was always open to people who were in need. And this was the reason that she cultivated at a very early age a sense of empathy and connection with her fellow Ugandans who were in trouble. Mm-hmm. But the situation in the North is a particularly entrenched and ugly conflict. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about it and mm-hmm. how it came to be mm-hmm. and what the situation of women in that part of Uganda really is right now.
Right. Well, it's Africa's longest lasting conflict to date. 19 years it's been going on. And it's one that's created about 2 million internally displaced people, people who have had to move from their homes as a result of the conflict. About 1.5 million are located in camps, where they're then surrounded by the military who are there to protect them, but who often have become their foes as well, as a result of the fact that many women face rape and harassment and intimidation by these soldiers that are protecting them.
Now, these camps, these are not refugee camps. These are for people who have been internally displaced in their own country.
That's correct. There are people who don't benefit in the same way as perhaps refugees might, people who've had to flee to another country. They don't benefit from the same food, humanitarian aid, clothes, blankets, and so forth to the same degree that refugees do when they cross a border. So these are people who are within the country.
In other words, refugees do come from, for example, Sudan, mm-hmm. A neighboring a country that neighbors Uganda,
right.
That has its own problems. Mm-hmm. They come across the border, they end up in one of these camps, mm-hmm. but they get better treatment
right.
as refugees.
Right.
They're eligible for international aid in a way that the Ugandans themselves are not.
Right.
That seems particularly cruel in a way.
Well, and it's an issue that's becoming more salient. In fact, there are twice as many internally displaced people in the world as refugees. And in fact, half of them are in Africa. And so this is an issue that's gaining greater recognition. But in a way, these people fall through the cracks because there's no particular agency to take care of them.
Mm.
Mm. But just
what about their own government?
Well, their own government has these soldiers who are protecting them, but these same soldiers are also harassing them, carrying out human rights violations against them, raping the women in the camps, and so in a way, their protectors end up being
oppressors.
As bad as the rebels who they're also fleeing.
Now, this is the Lord's Resistance Army, mm-hmm. so-called, self-proclaimed,
right.
Led by a man named
Joseph Kony.
Joseph Kony,
right.
Who's been declared by the International Human Rights Court in The Hague as what?
There are now warrants for his arrest and the arrest of four other leaders of the Lord's Resistance Army by the International Criminal Court in The Hague. So he's by all standards, he's a major violator of human rights. But he's also someone who has created a situation where you have about 25,000 children in the North that have been abducted and are being used as child soldiers. And this has also meant that the children who remain live in fear of this rebel army, and have about 40,000 children come into the towns at night and live and stay in various hospitals and on storefronts and sleep there to escape being abducted by this warlord.
What a horrendous situation.
It is. It's absolutely staggering. I mean, this is one of the most brutal conflicts I've ever heard of or known of. And people don't just, when they're captured, they may be abducted and used as sex slaves or as soldiers, but that's if they're lucky. Otherwise, they're killed and in very horrific, brutal ways. It's really quite unspeakable.
Mm. The children who are abducted are brutalized
mm-hmm.
in order for them to be useful
mm-hmm.
In the military campaign,
mm-hmm.
and the women who are trying to stop this practice mm-hmm. are part of this growing resistance movement on the part of the women of the North.
Right. Right. And you have some very, very brave women who have been involved in these efforts. One of the most well-known is Angelina Atyam, who was a nurse midwife, a mother of six children, whose daughter, Charlotte, was abducted along with 139 other girls. And she's just one example of someone who then went into the bush and negotiated with the rebels and got 30 of the girls released who had been abducted in 1996 from Aboke. And but she was made to make a very, very difficult decision. She could either have her daughter or have these 30 girls released. And so she made this very difficult decision.
Oh, I read about her.
Yes.
I read about her in the New York Times.
Right, exactly. There was an article in the New York Times magazine a few months ago. Anyway, she got the 30 and left her daughter. Her daughter was later on released, but she made this incredibly difficult decision to have to choose between these two. And she's the founder of an organization called Concerned Parents Association, which involves about 5,000 parents and their extended families. And they work to release abducted children in rebel captivity and also try to give international attention to this issue, which really has fallen between the cracks.
And so this is a wonderful example of what Ruth Ojambo mm-hmm. Talked about in describing the amazing resilience mm-hmm. on the part of the women in the North and their capacity for community building. Mm-hmm. What she was really indicating was the possibility that a democratic grassroots movement could emerge from the efforts of these women. I'm assuming if they are properly supported. And it takes more than an organization like ISIS-Wiki, mm-hmm. in spite of the fact that they're doing astonishing things mm-hmm. To aid and support the efforts to bring women to the table, to bring their voices into the political arena so that they can be heard. Mm-hmm. What's the likelihood of that happening, do you think?
Of what happened?
Of the women in the North mm-hmm. being able to bring the conflict to an end, to operate in any significant way towards that end.
Right. Well, I mean, one would hope and one wishes, but that's not enough. I mean, there has to be something more, and especially some more movement on the part of the government. Right now, the government's had a three-pronged strategy to bring an end to the conflict. One has been an amnesty to get people, rebels, to turn themselves in. Another has been the peace talks, which have been led by Betty Bigombe, a woman from the North. And the peace initiative has had a lot of support among Northerners. And then finally, the military strategy, which seems to be the one they're preferring right now. And this has only exacerbated the conflict and really hasn't led to any resolution in sight. And so really, until the government moves more in the direction of supporting the peace talks and peace negotiations, I don't see much hope for the kinds of strategies that Ruth is supporting, as do the majority of people in the North.
We're talking with Eileen Tripp. She's Associate Dean of International Studies and Director of the Women's Studies Research Center at the University of Wisconsin. She's written several books about women and politics in Uganda and the women's movement throughout Africa. And she was responsible for bringing Ruth Ojambo Ochang to the campus this past week. Ruth Ojambo Ochang, human rights leader, peace activist, and director of ISIS-Wiki. We'll be hearing directly from Ruth in just a minute. I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth.
Following the talk on the Ideas Network is almost like taking part in a statewide town hall meeting. We'll bring you the views of advocates, analysts, lawmakers, and citizens on the many different issues that shape our lives. Keep informed and be involved by listening along to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
You're listening to Here on Earth. I'm Jean Faraca. This hour, we are talking about the efforts on the part of women in Africa to gain a larger voice in the political process and to help bring about peace. In particular, we're talking about the situation in northern Uganda, which has seen the longest running civil war in Africa's recent history. With us is Eileen Tripp. She's Associate Dean of International Studies and Director of the Women's Studies Research Center at the University of Wisconsin. Professor Tripp was responsible for bringing Ruth Ojambo Ochang to the campus of the University of Wisconsin this past week. I had an opportunity to speak with Ruth Ojambo Ochang, who is the director of the ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange, an organization that was originally founded in Geneva and then was moved to Kampala, Uganda. I asked Ruth why ISIS Wiki was founded and how it's made its way to Uganda.
Women were isolated. They did not have any communicative means that would bring them together to share the best ideas and knowledge so that they can improve their status and put their issues on the international agenda. So having heard that, they thought it was important to develop an organization that would exactly do that. Put communicative mechanisms that would bring women of all races, all ages, from different geographical areas to discuss potential issues that would enable women to at least improve their status. So having worked in Europe for so many years, and of course by the 1993 when it moved to Uganda in Africa, women in Europe were all connected. Mm. They had the radios, they had their cell phones, they had the internet. So there was no need for them to continue evolving in Europe. They needed to go to a place where women needed this kind of services more. And Africa was one of the continents that was chosen.
Mm. Now, the civil war in the north of Uganda continues.
Yeah.
And how are women involved in that?
We did not see an organization that was focusing on how to generate information about women. And this is where ISIS got a niche. Coming to Uganda, where the war had already taken place in the 80s, but then in the 90s it had started in northern Uganda, we decided that we needed to do something that would contribute to women coming up and changing the whole situation as it was in Uganda, in northern Uganda.
What made you think that women had the power to do that?
Because of their attributes. Women, given that Uganda was a country that had been mad with conflict since 1966, and the cycle of conflict was going on, we decided that their attributes, listening to them in their isolation, they had wonderful ideas that if they were brought out of that isolation, given some skills on how to go about it, they would do that. For example, women, many women all over the world have demonstrated compassion. They are people who are caregivers, which is an attribute very good for taking details of how to sort out issues. Women are people who are naturals of life. And this attribute is very, very useful for relationship building. So we thought if we gave them just another step to know what conflict is, to analyze it, how to manage it, and what role women can play in this whole peace process.
But women themselves have been targeted in the war, and they're being the victims of systematic rape.
You may be surprised that having gone through all those horrendous experiences, it is again the women in northern Uganda who are picking up pieces to care for the sick, to try and see that those who have been raped don't feel that within this whole context of their pain. It's again the women who come and mobilize other women and say, the world has not ended. You are still a human being and you can go on. So that inner built strength that they have even after their bodies have become battleground. It gave us a feeling that these women have the potential to go on and build peace. And they have done it. For example, you'll find that women in northern Uganda mobilized all the women who were gang raped and raped by not only the Lord Resistance Army, who are the rebels, but there is a lot of evidence that government soldiers also raped them. But they were able to mobilize them, and the raped women themselves went out into villages using drama skits whenever the guns are not fighting to tell their communities that we were raped. Our husbands threw us out of the homes, but we must make sure that we continue as a community and forget those who have done this. The same women are the ones who are moving mother-to-mother communication to make sure that they convince the mothers of those children who are rebels in the bush to pull them out. There is no way your mother can tell you, come back, and a child doesn't. And we see quite a number of children having come back from rebel activities because their mothers have talked to them.
So let's unpack this. You just gave me a very complex picture.
Yeah.
What happens to the children who are co-opted into the war by the rebels? The children who are forced to become soldiers.
Mm-hmm. These children are as innocent as any of us who have not touched the gun, because in most cases they are found in their beds, they are found in schools, just taking their ordinary life as any child in the world would do, and then they are taken away. Within the time they are taken away, those who have come back tell us very horrifying stories. They are indoctrinated into knowing that killing is not a big issue.
As a matter of fact, I've heard that part of the initiation in some cases is forcing a child to kill his own parents.
Some do that if they come back to fight. They are told that we are going on a mission and you are going to kill. But by the time they come back within the bush, they have taken them through so many horrific activities that they do, that at the end of the day, when these children come back, they don't have any sense of, this is my mother, this is my father.
They're desensitized.
Of course. So if you are 11 years old, for example, you have been abducted and you are taken into the bush, and the first thing they are telling you is to go and kill those who refuse to do what they were told to do. And killing, if it is just going to kill and you chop off someone's head, maybe it may not be as traumatic as one who is told to do the killing in a silent way, killing one's body bit by bit. That demonizes this child completely. So by the time he comes even at the front line, he's not himself or herself. Mm. She's completely a different person.
Mm. So you're telling me that these women are themselves raped systematically because they've been recognized as being the source of building new community. And their children have been taken away from them and forced into conscription in this horrendous way. And then what happens?
Of course, when the warring factions start fighting, the target is a woman. And rightly so, as you have said, it's about destroying that community. You break a woman in a community, in a household, you've broken that home.
And then she gets thrown out by
and
her husband.
And she's thrown out of her husband.
So we're really talking about the destruction of the family unit.
Exactly. Not only the family unit, the destruction of a whole set of community, because the raping is systematic. It's not raping one woman in a village and going off, but you are systematically raping all the women in the village, which means that the whole village is shattered. And of course, we have now known that rape is a crime of war, because they do it intentionally so that they can break that community. But as I said, the strength in women from the 10 years we have worked with women in conflict situations, not only in Uganda, but in all conflict situations in Africa, we see that at the end of the day, we don't know what kind of strength these women have, but they get up and realize their role of making the community come back to sanity. And they do this in a number of ways. One, because at that time there is no food whatsoever, you cannot go into the bushes to dig. They still struggle to see how they are going to get food for their families. All the men tend to run away. And it is the women now who go on mobilizing all these children and trying to think, where can I get the assistance? And of course, in Uganda, it has been very clear that the non-government organizations are doing a tremendous job. So women now know that they have to go to them and present their problems and saying, I need help. And that's how we picked some of these women leaders to say, okay, we are going to work with you and try to see what we could do. Because one woman, I'll give an example of one woman who was just carrying out her gender roles. She had gone to fetch water. Little did she know that they had planted landmines near a well, and both her legs were blown off. The husband said, I never married a woman like you. Go away. And not only herself, but her children. But when we met her during our documentation, we asked her, Grace, what can we do for you? She did not ask for money. That's the inner built strength I'm talking about. Grace said, I still have two hands, and I have been seeing in the town, there are sewing machines where I can use my hands. Is it possible to train me how to use the machine and then buy me a machine, because I don't have anything? And for us, we thought, if I were the one, I would be mourning. I don't have the legs. But she forgot about what had happened to her. That's the attribute I'm talking about. She was caring more about her children. We did that. We solicited money, bought her a sewing machine, and community-based organization we work with took the responsibility to train her how to use the machine. Today, as I speak, Grace's children are at school. Grace fends for herself. She has not waited for anybody to give her handouts. And that's what we are saying. If women are mobilized, women know how to build peace. Peace is not about just saying the guns are over and let us move on. No, peace is about transforming the society. And it is the women who have the central ability to do this, because they know that I have to care for those who can't manage to do what they are doing. I must make sure that I use the resources that I have to move on. We come across women in Lango region, Acholi region, who have the herbal medicine.
The what medicine?
Herbal. Being in armed conflict.
And herbal.
Herbal. Uh-huh. Yeah. They have their indigenous knowledge of using different herbal trees to heal some of the diseases, like the rash, malaria, wounds. All these, they know which trees can cure these kind of diseases. And women have gone out to utilize those indigenous knowledge to help the people in the IDP camps. I just wonder sometimes.
What is the IDP camps?
The internally displaced camps. In Uganda, in northern Uganda, we have over 1.6 million people living in internally displaced camps. Places where sanitation is not there are no medical services. Mm. Although the infrastructures may be there, the medical personnel are not there because of the war. The drugs are not there because the rebels come and, of course, take them away. So you find that the health centers are just, you know, white elephants standing there. So women decided their children and their husbands and their brothers and sisters are not going to die of ailments that they can use the herbal trees to heal. And that's how some of them are sustaining these horrific situations that they are living in IDP camps.
But how can women stop the men from carrying on this civil war?
The women can play a role, yes, by saying, look, it's not worth it to get up the guns and go to fight. We can negotiate the problems that we have, as they always negotiate in their houses. Otherwise, there would be beatings in the homes daily. But given the complexity of the problem of armed conflict in Africa, I think it needs to go beyond the women. It needs for governments, for the states in Africa to actually embrace good governance, to be able to practice genuine democracy that would bring, you know, equality to all people, regardless of where you're coming from, what gender you are, what kind of class you are. But that's what is lacking. We are seeing a lot of nepotism, a lot of wanting to amass wealth of the few to the goodness of the so many people. And as such, you find that no matter how much women try to strive to do this, unless there is good democracy among the African states and the democracy that embraces and respects the dignity of every individual, the women may have a big problem to sustain the peace.
What kind of connection can you make between the hut where the woman is living and practicing democracy and governance?
To me, it would be involving women into the governance structures so that they can take in their new ideas of what democracy should be like. They will take into the governance the, you know, approaches of how to govern people. Because when I look at the way the governance goes on in Africa, I'm sure probably even in other parts of the world, the men tend to take it too much into being in control, the power being with them, controlling the rest of the people so that they can sustain their power. Whereas the way women approach the leadership, their leadership style is about inclusiveness. It is about consultation. It is about dialogue. It is about discussing issues with the others, which I'm not seeing so much in the kind of democracies we are having in Africa, and especially in my country, Uganda.
I'm Jean Faraka. You're listening to Here on Earth. We'll continue this interview with Ruth Ojumba Ocheng in just a minute.
The Ideas Network is for people like you. You value fairness and balance and open discussion. You value healthy debate and finding common ground. You appreciate intelligence and a good sense of humor. That's what we try to provide each day on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
When you log on to WPR.org, you will find a wealth of information about Wisconsin Public Radio, as well as links to other Wisconsin and national websites that might be of interest to you. Go to WPR.org.
I'm Jean Faraca. You're listening to Here on Earth, where this hour we are talking about the struggles on behalf of the women in northern Uganda to gain their right to a voice in the political process. I had the chance to talk with Ruth Ojambo Ocheng this week. She is a human rights leader, peace activist, and director of the ISIS Wiki, that is the ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange. Let's listen.
Yeah, I think I'll take the case of Uganda because I won't take the whole continent since I don't know much of the traditions. We are Africans, but we are not homogeneous. But taking some parts, especially northern Uganda where the conflict is, there was no way clans got out of their homes to go and fight before they got a go-ahead by the women. The women came out to even plan how they were going to fight. Mm. And that kind of planning took into account how to protect the women, how to protect the children, and even the style of fighting. So for me, already there was a structure. There are structures which could be followed going back into their own history.
Female leadership.
The female leadership of you can't do this. And even going to Egypt, we see the same thing. Women being leaders, there was a way of systematically dealing with issues. And to me, if we took an example of northern Uganda and take their history, as they say, that it was a woman who decided we are going to fight, but there was a style of fighting, you know, clan fighting. And even when they went to fight and they made the mistakes and did not do what they were told to do, there was another structure of purification and of saying, I am sorry. And they went through some rituals of cleansing whatever that person had done, and they totally forgave each other. Mm. So why is it that we cannot integrate their tradition within the modern way of governance or of peace building?
Have those traditions been lost?
I think to some extent, yes, because you find that quite a number of those who knew the processes have died. But at the moment in northern Uganda, they are what we call the traditional leaders. They are bringing this whole issue back. The religious leaders also remember very well what they used to do. And this is where they are insisting that instead of bringing in the International Criminal Court to go and pull their children out and criminalize them as people who did wrong, when we know that they were abducted against their will, they could initially use this traditional initiation first and see to it that the children who are coming back, they feel that the trauma and everything has been forgiven by their communities by going through the rituals. They don't disagree that the leader, like Kony, should be committed to the International Criminal Court. But they would like...
This is the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army.
They say, yes, he could be taken to the court, but they must first of all do their traditional process so that even if Kony goes to the International Criminal Court, he should have said sorry to his people. Mm. It's important that they heal, because it is... neighbor's child killing neighbor's child. It has been all that messed up that it needs those traditional beliefs that they have to be done first. But as an individual, I believe after that, we also need to put institutions in place which are going to deal with the trauma that both the perpetrators and the survivors have gone through, and Ugandans at large. That's why I always feel it is very important when we look at the war in Northern Uganda, not to look at them as Northern Uganda who need it. The whole Uganda needs that kind of process. And I would love to see the example of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of South Africa being adapted in our own situation so that we can heal as a nation. At the moment, we are superficially thinking we are peaceful, but I don't think we are. We can do this with the support of the whole of the world. The world is now one. It is such a small world that what is happening in North America, we get it within minutes because of the communication that is availed to some of us. And what is happening in Uganda, you may be getting bits and pieces which are only the negatives, but we would love you to pick the positives that are coming out of Uganda. And particularly as the North, which is very well developed, which has a lot of power to countries like Uganda, you must call for genuine democracy. We want to see good governance in our communities. You can hold even the, you know, not only you as the North, but institutions like the UN should really implement what they are saying. If there is bad governance, that country must be held accountable so that people don't have to suffer the way they are suffering. So,
in other words, you would welcome intervention?
Of course. Very much so. You've done quite something, but I think North America hasn't done as much as, let's say, the Nordic countries, Norway, the Denmark, the Germans. They have done quite a lot in terms of the conflict in the North. But I would like, America is a superpower, and I'm sure if you made an intervention into the Northern question, probably it would end faster than what it is being done today.
And yet, on the other hand, you want Ugandan internal institutions and traditions to be able to also come to the assistance of the Ugandan people and resolve internal conflict.
Yeah, your intervention would be to help us build those internal institutions, build the traditional, positive aspects. We don't want to take all the negative traditions, but the positive that made us become one community, the one which respected a lot of relations between households, the ones which made us become, respecting what others are doing within our own diversity. Mm-hmm. We want to strengthen that. But given the levels of poverty and the destructions that have taken place, I don't think we have adequate resources to put these systems and mechanisms back in play.
The sense that we have that these civil wars that we see so endemic in Africa that actually arise from old tribal conflicts and a way of life that had to do with, as you pointed out earlier, the women were the ones that decided, yes, we can go to war and mm-hmm. under these terms. Mm-hmm. But that speaks to an older system, mm-hmm. Which really has to be let go if you want to arrive at what you're describing as democratic governance.
Yeah, but
the willingness to go to war.
Yeah, the willingness to go to war at that time, we can link it with what is happening now, but not very much to that, because as at that time there was a lot of there were small issues probably that were taking them to war. Things like wanting the cows from one clan to another. But I want to take you back. All this developed from what happened to Africa some 500 years ago when slave trade came to Africa. That is where we are getting all these things, the structures we are talking about. When slave trade came to Africa and the way the African people were handled, they lost the self-esteem. They started thinking they are so inferior to any other people, other races. And within that, before we even healed from the slave trade, we get the colonialists coming in. Now, the colonies, when they came in, they used their structure of dividing us and ruling us, which reminded us of the slave trade and saying, oh my God, the powers, these are powerful people. And what they say is what we are going to do. And in Uganda, it is the British who brought this whole thing of thinking people who are tall and big will have to be in the army. So that automatically structured people from the northern Uganda to be the one to hand the gun. And then the people from the southern part of the country, as they used to say, oh, these are good enough, they can be polished and become good administrators. So already you are structuring people to be thinking that they are good at that. And for over 30 years, Northern has knew they are the only ones to be in the army. And when this new government came and tried to show that they can as well also go and do some other things, they had never been prepared. So the fighting continues because they want to continue with what they knew best.
I see.
Before we even got to terms with that, we come to the new crises, the liberalization, globalizations, all these unfair trades. So all these things encompassed has caused us to continue with that mentality of thinking that you have always to fight for what you want, whereas it is possible to sit down and negotiate for what you want.
That's Ruth Ojumbo Ocheng, human rights leader, peace activist, and director of ISIS Wiki, the Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange in Uganda. Actually, it's an international movement. And with us in the studio is Eileen Tripp, Associate Dean of International Studies and Director of the Women's Studies Research Center at the University of Wisconsin. She's the author of Women and Politics in Uganda. And it was while she was researching her book that she met Ruth Ojumbo Ocheng and brought her recently to the University of Wisconsin, where she gave the SOFA lecture. And we have open lines for anyone who'd like to join in these last few minutes. It's 1-800-642-1234. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is hereonearth@wpr.org. We have Jeff joining in from Madison. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for your call.
Yes, how are you?
Fine.
I wanted to react to your guest comments. She's completely right on all accounts, but just one nuance I'd like to add, that this war in northern Uganda, I don't want to leave everybody thinking this is a case of the dispossessed against the possessed, a sort of Nepalese situation or a Sri Lankan or some other situation in which for, you know, centuries or decades the one group feels oppressed by their. This is the action of a few crazy leaders, really crazy leaders, who have gathered up, and no one knows the numbers, or at least they don't announce them. But it's in probably the very few thousands on their side. It is a case in which Western military intervention would make the difference, but because of the continuing fallout from U.S. intervention in Mogadishu, what was it, 15, 16 years ago, and seeing 14 rangers getting dragged through the streets, we continue to ignore these situations where our intervention could make a difference for the positive good. I was in Kampala. I talked to you earlier on a show with John Nichols about, I was in during Katrina, and just amazed at how little people here knew of this situation and how relatively minor an intervention it would be to change things there. When we talk about the UN intervening, the need for it, let's not forget that that does not happen without a very few donor nations, ours in particular, saying go.
So well, what makes you think, Jeff, that considering this is the longest running conflict in Africa, that it wouldn't take much to end it? When you speak of the crazy leaders, are you speaking of Joseph Kony, the head of the Lord's Resistance?
Resistance Army, Joseph, whatever his name is, I forget now. But I mean,
Joseph Kony.
This group does not have widespread support amongst, you know, it's not a peasant guerrilla rebel movement that you've seen in other parts.
And yet more than 20,000 children have been abducted into
it. Abducted, exactly. But I mean, that's how they recruit. This is not something that has the, you know, the sympathies of the peasant in the bush. This is something that is forced upon them in every, there are people there called the night dwellers who only come out. They live at night, whole communities. They live at night because it's safer, and they sleep during the day. This is not something that they support, in a, you know, other than the few who have the guns and are running this thing. So just not to confuse it with the sorts of liberation movements, even the horrors of Rwanda are understood in the context of century of oppression, perceived oppression by one group over another. This is a man's lust for power and the people he's managed to get on his side. That's my comment.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Eile Tripp, do you think that this is a conflict that could easily be resolved through intervention?
I think that one should perhaps first consider what people in the northern part of the Uganda want themselves. And I was there this summer talking to human rights activists and various people in the north, and my sense was that their first option would be a peaceful one and trying to move ahead with the peace negotiations that Betty Bigombe has been leading and put more emphasis on that before any other military solution is considered. And that possibility has not been exhausted fully, and in fact it's been sabotaged by the government as well as by Kony himself. So that would be their preference, to really exhaust the peace option first before other things are considered.
What do you mean exhaust the peace option?
Really, really go for it. Right now, the government's strategy has been one that's both combining military as well as peace talks, and you can't do both at the same time. You really have to go either with peace talks or do the military option, but they both don't work together at the same time.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us this hour. Eile Tripp, Associate Dean of International Studies and Director of the Women's Research Studies Research Center at the UW. Visit us online at www.hereonearth.org. And if you look under archives, you'll find links to the ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange and the Women's Studies Research Center at the University of Wisconsin. Here on Earth is produced by Carmen Jackson, Joe Hartke, Lisa Boo, Heather Sturr, Steve Zalasnik, and myself, in cooperation with the Division of International Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. I'm Jean Faraca.